Hi, everybody. I'm Matt Katz, and this is The Takeaway. While research into a COVID-19 vaccine is being fast-tracked by a number of companies around the world, we're still at least months away from a publicly available pharmaceutical solution to the virus. But public health agencies do have another tool that they say is key to containing the virus until a vaccine is ready. And that's contact tracing. It's a process that involves calling patients who have tested positive for coronavirus and determining who they came in close contact with while they were contagious. The contact tracers then reach out to those people and advise them to quarantine for the next 14 days. It's a difficult job, particularly given the speed in which COVID-19 spreads. And to meet the demand, states are currently hoping to add thousands of contact tracers to their workforces. Joining me now to talk about all of this is Angela Clendenin, Instructional Assistant Professor in Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the Texas A&M University School of Public Health. Thank you for being here, Angela.
Oh, thank you very much.
Angela, what is the purpose of contact tracing and how exactly does it work?
When you're dealing with a disease, obviously it's something that spreads in a community that you really can't see, smell, touch, or taste. And so contact tracing is really taking somebody that we know has the disease because they've been diagnosed and then trying to almost build a perimeter around them by talking to the people they've been in close contact with and getting them isolated away and watching them for symptoms so that we're building this fence around the disease and keeping it from spreading any further. It's a public health mitigation effort that has been used for years and years, and is really effective.
What are some of the main challenges that COVID-19 specifically poses when it comes to doing contact tracing?
So a few of the challenges that COVID-19 has presented to challenge our ability to test, trace, and isolate is the fact, one, that it moves really quickly. It's very transmissible. The second has been the widespread testing that we're trying to ramp up in our country. If you can't identify a case quickly enough, then they will have come into contact with several other people, and then trying to reach those people before they're able to spread it to others. And so that time between diagnosis and actually doing an initial case interview to identify the contacts and then reaching out to those contacts, it really has to move quickly, and COVID-19 has been a challenge to keep up with.
What are some of the best practices to follow then for those who are doing contact tracing for COVID-19?
So the best practices that we have for our contact tracers, a lot of times by the time we get to the contact, they may or may not know that they've been exposed. And so it's really important that they be empathetic and understand that it can be quite a shock sometimes to the people that they're reaching out to. People are very scared about COVID-19 because this is a disease that has never been in our society before. So every person in the population is susceptible to this disease. People are scared. They have a lot of questions. They want to know how long they're going to have to be in isolation. And for a lot of people, that's challenging when they're living paycheck to paycheck day to day, and then someone's having to tell them that they're going to have to be in isolation for 14 days. So it takes someone who's really empathetic and who can understand the progression of the disease.
Now, you're currently leading a small contact tracing team in your county in Texas. Tell me about how that's going.
So yes, here at Texas A&M, we decided we're here in Brazos County and we needed to do what we could do to help support the local public health effort to do case investigation and contact tracing. So a couple of faculty members and a couple of graduate students are starting a program and we're getting ready to ramp it up to do the contact tracing for the county. One of the things, you know, that we experience, and you can see this in various places around the United States, is we have a very diverse community. So some of the challenges that we deal with is finding people who can speak Spanish in our area, but other languages and other communities also pose that same challenge. Again, trying to get people to identify all of their contacts. You're asking them to remember who all they've been in close contact with for the past 14 days. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we even manage to get ahead of the process And we've actually received the report from the testing site or from the provider who did the test that we have a positive COVID case before they've actually been able to reach the case. So we're the ones that are breaking the news to them that they're positive. It's been a mixed bag of experiences, but the one commonality that we work really hard to keep in mind, we're here talking about cases and contacts, but at the end of the day, the cases and contacts are people. And they're people who are probably getting some pretty unsettling news. And so we are reminded constantly of the humanity behind the work that we're doing.
Have you made some of these calls yourself and had to tell people that they are positive?
Yes. Of course, I'm calling about a COVID test. Has anybody contacted you with your results yet? I try to make sure that they've already known, but a lot of times I've had to tell them that they were positive. And of course, it's a difficult conversation, but most of the time they're really grateful just to know and to be empowered, to give them information that gives them some modicum of control over their next 14 days has been kind of humbling.
And then the other calls you're making are saying, listen, you've been in contact with somebody who's positive. Now you need to self-isolate. How do those conversations go?
So our community is a little bit smaller. It's definitely not Houston, Texas. So we've been really fortunate that the vast majority of our contacts had already been told. The actual case is already mm-hmm. called. If they knew ahead of time, they've already called for the most part. The reason for this is we have some instances of what we call clustering, where there's two or more people in the same either household or work unit, something like that, that all have it. When you call one of them and say you're positive, you can pretty much know that they're sitting there on the phone with everybody in the household who we would be calling as a contact. And so we're already kind of doing double duty.
Is it tough getting contacts from people so you can then call them to tell them that they were exposed to the virus? Are people reluctant sometimes to share this kind of information?
You know, it varies. I have experienced people who are very open. They're very worried that they've done something to expose the people that they know. And so they're very forthcoming about who they want to help get help notifying about their potential exposure because they feel that sense of responsibility. But there are also times when it is exactly like you say, it is the opposite. They're a little hesitant. Sometimes when we talk to people who perhaps are a little uncertain of their immigration status, they may be a little more reluctant to share information about who they've been with just because they're afraid that we're trying to do something not public health related. Or, you know, they're afraid that if we end up calling other people, then somehow maybe they're not going to be able to go back to work, which they shouldn't be doing. But some of them rely on a day-to-day paycheck. So they're a little hesitant about letting us know of who their contacts are because they don't want it to get out.
Angela Clendenin is an instructional assistant professor in epidemiology and biostatistics at the Texas A&M University School of Public Health. Thanks so much, Angela, for sharing this with us and explaining contact tracing.
Thank you very much, Matt, and y'all stay healthy.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.